Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Because they really do truly care more about abortion than actually having the Democratic Party win.
This was not a good faith effort to get someone to bake a cake that meant a lot to him. He was trolling Jack Phillips. And you know who's trolling Jack Phillips now also? The state of Colorado.
It violates the narrative that the mainstream media has chosen, which is the only way you can ever write about homosexuality is with gays as victims of oppression.
It is a horrendous act of pastoral malpractice to deprive the congregation of the content of the small catechism.
Confessional Lutheran missionary campus pastors love Issues Etc.
That it has been the farthest thing from a slow news week. There's been a lot of news, big news when you have indictments connected to the President of the United States, or you have charges being made and you have guilty verdicts flying around all over the place. But on Monday, the Pope, who is, well, he's no small figure himself, wrote a 2,000-word letter in response to the priestly abuse scandal, and in particular, the grand jury report out of Pennsylvania dealing with over 1,000 victims and over 300 criminals. What shall we call them? Priests who use their office and the trust of their office in order to commit crimes against children and young people. I've never seen a story come and go so quickly. We heard about it. We heard about the Pope's letter. We had maybe a few follow-ups on it, and then it disappeared. Why so little coverage? Usually when the Pope has something to say, the press is all ears. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 23rd of August. We're going to be talking about media coverage of Pope Francis's reaction to the clergy abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church. Terry Mattingly will be our guest a little bit later. John Malcolm will join us. He's director of the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies and senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We're going to talk about the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. We'll review the movie The Meg with Pastor Ted Geese, and then we'll continue our series on prophets in the divine tribunal, looking at the prophets Zephaniah and Haggai with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about media coverage of Pope Francis's reaction to the clergy abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I don't think I've seen a Pope Francis story pop up and then disappear as fast. Now, maybe it got crowded out by Trump news, as so many things do, but why so little coverage of the Pope's reaction to probably the most horrendous story in three decades of priestly abuse news from the Roman Catholic Church in America?
Well, and it's the worst in America. I think there have been some cases that are worse, and there have been more glaring stories in other parts of the world, including in South America, the Pope's home country. But the pattern here is that the Pope receives tremendous coverage when he says things that echo or are compatible with the editorial page of the New York Times, defining the New York Times as kind of standing in for the mainstream press kind of as a whole. This is a story that people are really uncomfortable with. I would say it's clearly a story that the Pope is uncomfortable with. And so we have a Reuters report is one of the things I have found. And it's a pretty straightforward representation of the content of the Pope's address. And at the end of it, you know, where it talks about his heart-wrenching pain, and he promises there'll be no more cover-ups and a lot of other things. At some point, I really find myself more inclined to react to the Pope's letter than to the coverage, because what little coverage there's been reflects his letter, logically enough, but it's the subjects that aren't in the letter that are actually making Catholics write me about this letter and write to Catholic websites. So the actual kind of heat that was generated by this letter from the Pope was not generated by its contents, but by what's not in it. And the stuff that's not in it is the same stuff that's not in most of the mainstream press coverage of the issues, multiple issues, related to this whole story. Also, I think a lot of people are reacting to the fact that this came out just like as a digital ink on digital paper kind of response, instead of the Pope filling St. Peter's Basilica with incense, falling on his face and getting up and making some sort of statement of repentance or something like that on behalf of the church. They were looking for something where the symbolism of liturgy crosses over into making a statement about church doctrine and church law.
So other than the fact that they elected not to say a lot about the Pope's reaction, now that we've had a week or so to, well, give the press time to get up to speed, how do you evaluate the coverage of this ongoing scandal?
Well, you can see kind of a nutshell if you go back to the Pope's statement here for just a moment. I did a couple of searches of the document using a search engine, and it's very interesting what subjects are not mentioned at all. Now, I say what I'm about to say also as a person who is getting a lot of email kind of jumping on me from conservative Catholics, because I have not insisted that what a lot of conservative Catholics think, that this whole story is essentially about homosexuality and a gay priesthood. And I recently published a post, which we can discuss here in a moment, in which I argue that talk about the gay priesthood, the percentage of gays in the priesthood, networks of power, the Lavender Mafia, etc., I said that that's an important part of the story, but it's not the most important part of the story. In fact, I ranked it third, you know, in terms of the subjects that the press is struggling to handle right now. But if you look at the Pope's statement, some important words that don't appear in his letter are the word bishop or bishops. There is no reference to seminary or seminarians. There's no reference to celibacy, in terms of broken celibacy vows. The word vows does not occur. The word homosexuality does not occur. The word gay does not occur. The word boys does not occur. It seems like everyone around the world has agreed to refer to this entire story as child abuse and to use the term children for the victims, when the actual Pennsylvania grand jury report accurately reported, and I thought quite fairly reported, it just hauled off and said most of the victims were boys, but there were cases involving girls too. And I think that's a grammatically accurate way of representing what normally shows up in these kinds of scandals, and this is not the first of these to come out. As I've told you before, I've been following this story since the mid-1980s. So, I mean, there are clearly subjects here that the press doesn't want to talk about, the Pope didn't want to talk about, and so they kind of mutually agreed not to talk about them. Does that make sense? In this post I wrote the other day, I was getting so many emails about why wasn't I talking more about the homosexual story? Why wasn't I saying the press should be focusing more and more attention on the gay story and that sort of thing? I finally sat down, and I had written a column last week about the late Richard Sipe, who was an extremely, extremely liberal Roman Catholic, who led the charge for 40, almost 50 years. He was a psychotherapist, a former Dominican psychotherapist, and part of his job was to interview troubled priests. And his own private files on this issue were voluminous, and when he died a couple of weeks ago, I am told that he had those private files destroyed and that he sent his public files to bishopaccountability.org, the organization that has worked so hard on this. But I ended up, Sipe and then another Catholic liberal, a seminary leader named Father Donald Cousins, who I've interviewed numerous times, and another conservative, an investigator and academic named Leon Podolz. Have y'all had Leon on the show?
Many times.
Okay. So you know him well. So one of the principles I follow as a reporter is that when you have strong, informed voices on the left agreeing with strong, informed voices on the right, you probably have got some fairly sound information. Because normally in Catholic wars, the left and the right can't agree on anything, even how to phrase the problems. So I wrote this little set of three things, and I'll just read them briefly for our listeners. This is in the order of power in this story. These are the three big ideas that I took away from synthesizing the interviews and reading I had done through the years with Sipe, Cousins, and Podolz. Number one, the key to the scandal is secrecy. Violated celibacy vows and potential blackmail. Lots of Catholic leaders, left and right, gay and straight, have sexual skeletons in their closets, often involving sex with consenting adults. These weaknesses, past and or present, create a climate of secrecy in which it is hard to crack down on crimes linked to child abuse. That's almost exactly a direct quote from Sipe and his writings, and it also showed up in a dialogue section in the Academy Award-winning film Spotlight. And that's Sipe stating what he thinks is the heart of this whole thing. Now, I heard the exact same thing from Cousins and the exact same thing in the scathing, just stunningly powerful book by Leon Podolz called Sacrilege. Okay, number two, classic pedophiles tend to strike children of both genders. Parentheses. So there's some accuracy to the people who say you really shouldn't blame gays for pedophilia. When you're dealing with a classic case of pedophilia with very young children, you tend to have people who attack both genders. Okay, back to the statement. However, in terms of raw statistics, most child abuse cases linked to Catholic clergy are not true cases of pedophilia, but are examples of ephebophilia, intense sexual interest in post-pubescent teens or boys on the doorstep of the teen years. The overwhelming majority of these clergy cases are adult males with young males. That's number two. Number three, one of the biggest secrets hiding in the bitter fog from all of these facts is the existence of powerful networks of sexually active gay priests with many powerful predators. McCarrick is a classic example. Based on seminaries, at seminaries, and in ecclesiastical offices. Thus, these men have extraordinary power in shaping the lives of future priests. Now, that's my statement of the three. When I tell you what was not in the Pope's letter, you can see that the Pope isn't addressing any of what these two strong liberals who were experts on this subject and this strong conservative who was an expert on the subject, the Pope didn't address really any of the three issues they thought were most important. And these are the same issues that the press is struggling to cover as well. Yet there's a lot of focus on the victims, and of course that's totally valid. And there is some focus on the names and cases of the abusers. Yet I've noticed in some major publications, the New York Times and the Gannett newspapers, for example, they're focusing on female victims more than they're focusing on male victims. And I don't think, unless I've missed it, I don't think the New York Times has yet run the actual language of the factual summary from the grand jury report.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of Pope Francis's reaction to the clergy abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church. On the other side of the break, we will get Terry's reaction to something that Rod Dreher recently had to say here on the program about what, if the media were to begin digging on the story, they might find. And an anecdote he tells about, well, orders from the top not to talk about one facet of this story that is, not surprisingly, missing from most of the media coverage. Stay tuned.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together, or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we're talking about media coverage of Pope Francis's reaction to the clergy abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church. Terry Mattingly of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate is our guest. Terry, we recently interviewed our mutual friend, your colleague, Rod Dreher of the American Conservative, about the clergy abuse crisis. And here's part of Rod's explanation for some of the media coverage.
I think that if the media ever rouses itself, what they'll find is network after network of sexually active gay men who protected each other and promoted each other. This is a story that the media aren't eager to tell, though, so I don't know if it ever will be fully explored. It violates the narrative that the mainstream media has chosen, which is the only way you can ever write about homosexuality is with gays as victims of oppressors. And there's no way to fully understand this story of crisis in the Catholic Church without talking about the role of homosexual networks within the clergy.
That goes straight to your point three, Terry. What's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you need to understand that there are a lot of bishops. Here's how Sipe described it at one point, and then Podles told me exactly the same thing. He said, there are a lot of bishops that would like to clear this stuff up, and some of these bishops are straight, some of them are gay. The problem is that all of them have some sort of sexual violation of their own vows, either in their present or in their past. And the minute they start to speak out, everybody says, well, what about your old girlfriend? Or what about your old boyfriend? Or what about when you were in seminary? Didn't you, have some improper sexual ties to some of the seminary professors there or something? So the only thing I think I would disagree with Rod is that the networks, as I said in my point three, there's no question the lavender mafia, to use the term that conservative Catholics often use, there's no question that that's a big part of the story. But the point to understand is it's hard to uncover that part of the story. And it's even hard to uncover the situation with child abuse and with abuse of young boys, teens, young girls, etc. It's impossible to cover that up because at the top of the chain of order is the overarching climate of secrecy. Rod had a piece on the other day where he had a letter, which he printed with permission, by a former seminarian who is gay and is now a gay man in a partnered relationship, etc. But he talked about his own experiences in seminary. And what he said that was so striking and that agreed so much with what you would have heard from Sipe and from Podolz in particular and to Cousins as well, he would say secrecy and secrets were like currency that were traded inside a seminary to see who was loyal to who. And how many societies do you have in which teenage boys are put into circumstances, or young adult boys are put into circumstances where their entire lives and futures will be determined by bodies of older men with no input from women? And he would say, in certain situations, not all of them, let me stress, not all seminaries, but he was referring to a seminary that had a conservative reputation on the surface. He said, but once you got inside, sexual secrets was what ran the institution, what formed its power structures, and what formed the chains of loyalty that some people had to have to senior figures, their seminary directors, their vocational directors, their prime theologians, and then ultimately their bishops. So I'd like to stress that thing I said again. Lots of Catholic leaders, left and right, gay and straight, have sexual skeletons in their closets, often involving sex with consenting adults. That climate of weakness makes it hard to then cover either child abuse, pedophilia, and ephebophilia, and it makes it hard to cover the gay networks, because lots of people have trump cards they can play on other people, and this creates a climate of fear, secrecy, and blackmail. And that's the bigger story. So I think Rod is right. I think that is certainly a powerful element of this story. There are whole books on the subject, but the story's bigger than that. It's bigger than the gay network. It's bigger because there are more secrets and more closets than that one. Does that make sense?
It sounds like, in this case, it's not only a bit of the media not wanting to broach the subject, but also, even if they did, they would have to somehow overcome enormous internal hurdles in the Roman Catholic hierarchy and structure just to begin to tell the story. About a minute here.
Yes, and as Pope Benedict has said, and as Pope Francis has even hinted in some things, this goes all the way to the Vatican. And this goes to the prestigious colleges of Rome, which is how you guarantee the success of your career, by being recommended to those colleges. It's what puts you into the channels of promotion. I think right now one of the things people can do is actually listen to Roman Catholic lay people, and especially lawyers, criminal investigators, and some of the voices who have been looking into this for years. Look at, listen to them. Listen to how they frame the problems. And yes, you'll have to hear a lot of people scream about gay priests. But if you ask them, they know the problems are bigger than that too. And the other thing I want to say, what really came up with McCarrick, somebody's going to have to talk about the seminaries. At some point, someone has to take on the structure of how you enter the priesthood and how the climate of secrecy functions at that level. That's a really big story.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the Weekly on Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, John Malcolm of the Heritage Foundation joins us. We're going to talk about the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. How do they work exactly, and how likely is it that Brett Kavanaugh will go through, run the gauntlet, perhaps a little bruised and beaten, but eventually sitting on the Supreme Court? Stay tuned. Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're committed to increasing LCMS faculty and staff members. This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago. If you are a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod with excellent professional credentials, please consider applying for our faculty or staff family. Current openings are posted at cuchicago.edu/hr.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people, by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.